I'm proud to be a Jew, but that's way too Jewish for me.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning on Two Jewish is Laura Wetzler, a singer, songwriter, and musician, discussing her experience performing at a German synagogue where her great-grandfather served as cantor before the Holocaust. We'll also have a visit from our Two Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price, and our Mevina on Israel, Oshrat Borel. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. It's the second day of Passover today, the great festival of freedom and matzah. Actually, Pesach has four names in Jewish tradition, as we have discussed previously here on Two Jewish. Pesach, or Passover, for the Paschal offering, the lamb sacrificed and roasted in the days of the Bible and the temple. Chag HaMatzot, the holiday of matzah, the unleavened bread of affliction we eat this week. Chag HaAviv, the springtime festival, probably the oldest of the names of Passover. And most thematically, Zman HaCherutenu, the season of our freedom. Freedom from slavery, which means we need to try to feel what it was like on Passover to actually have been a slave in order to appreciate our liberation story. Now, for me, the best way to feel the pain of slavery is to eat lechem oni, the poor man's bread, matzah. While I love almost everything about being Jewish, my one area of personal aversion, the one Jewish food I find to be painful and inedible, is the one food we must eat in profusion this time of year, that ever-popular rendition of baked perforated cardboard, matzah, the bread of real affliction. I guess that to me, when the Israelites were given the choice between personal and religious freedom and eating only unleavened bread, or staying in slavery and eating regular bread, that must have been a pretty tough choice. I'm not sure I wouldn't have taken slavery. I know I received much criticism and many emails and texts and so on, professing shock that I can't stand matzah. How can I call myself a rabbi? And by the way, matzah with butter and salt is a fabulous food to eat. You know, frankly, anything with butter and salt tastes pretty good, including, but not limited to, newspaper and shirt cardboard, which matzah, of course, closely resembles, only worse. I mean, the French cook snails with butter and salt and claim they are edible. We Jews kind of do the same with matzah. But never let it be said that I can't be magnanimous on such subjects, or honest, and I admit that my profound distaste for matzah is not shared by many Jews. Of course, we Jews are known for embracing suffering and having martyr complexes, so maybe matzah is the perfect Jewish food. As Marilyn Monroe, once the most famous convert to Judaism, said after enjoying the Jewish delicacy of matzah balls, "Isn't there any other part of the matzah that you eat?" That quote is also ascribed to George W. Bush, by the way. Sadly, no, unless you count the box, which of course tastes the same as the matzah. Actually, in spite of my protestations about my aversion to matzah, I am the owner of a matzah tie. Not actually made out of matzah, that would be hard to launder. Plus, how could you tell if you got crumbs on it? But no, this is actually a silk tie with a very lifelike matzah print on it. I wear this tie, well, religiously the week of Pesach, and everyone admires it. And then I get to explain it probably not only looks like matzah, but tastes like matzah too. Yum. Well, our play-in comes this morning from the Passover musical playlist. It's a song about matzah, unsurprisingly, from the Seder we celebrated. Halachma Anya, this is the bread of affliction that our ancestors ate when they left the land of Egypt. Let all who are hungry come and eat. This is a madrigal-y version from the Western Winds called Ha Lachma Anya.
Ha Lachma Anya Diachalu Avatar.
Western Winds version of Halach Ma'anya, Matzah, the Bread of Affliction. By the way, you know what you call somebody who loves eating unleavened bread? A matzachist. Get it? A combination of matzah and masochist? Never mind. Just continue to enjoy eating your matzah this week. Well, our guest this morning requires no suffering at all to enjoy. Laura Wetzler is a multi-talented singer-songwriter with the ability to write and interpret music, especially Jewish music, in a wide variety of styles and forms, from Yiddish to Sephardic to the Abu Yudaya music of Uganda. And she has a great story to tell about her great-grandfather, a cantor in Germany long ago. Meet her and find out all about her when we come back soon on Too Jewish.
My name is John Ben Asher, and I'm the head of school at the Tucson Hebrew Academy. Tucson Hebrew Academy is a pluralistic kindergarten through eighth grade Jewish day school. We foster educational excellence through an interdisciplinary, integrated general studies and Judaic curriculum. We teach our students to apply Jewish values and learning to everyday life, enabling them to make their community and the world a better place. Our engaging, talented faculty ensure a rigorous, interactive, supportive learning environment. From the early years through comprehensive high school prep, children thrive in THA's uniquely enriching educational community and culture. Our 41-year tradition of excellence continues to produce highly skilled, critical, and creative thinking students with a strong moral compass and deep understanding of Jewish identity, traditions, and values, well prepared for the challenges to come. Tucson Hebrew Academy, thaaz.org, 529-3888.
If you like fun and games, you'll love this. And this. And even this. Casino del Sol Resort offers more fun under the sun with the newest slots, the best entertainment, and world-class golf. If you want fun, hit the at Casino del Sol Resort in Tucson. Take I-10 East to I-19 exit Valencia West or visit CasinoDelSolResort.com.
Well, they're out there having fun in that warm Arizona sun.
Enterprise of the Pasquagaki Tribe.
We are delighted to welcome to Too Jewish our guest this morning. Laura Wetzler is a remarkably talented musician, singer, performer. She has toured really widely all over the United States and in many parts of the world, and has a fascinating story about discovering a connection to a cantor, and we'll hear about that along the way too. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Rabbi. Thanks so much for having me.
It's a pleasure. You know, a CD wandered across my desk, and I popped it in, as I often do, and usually I'm disappointed, and this time I really wasn't. It was a beautiful CD of very different Jewish music, a broad array of styles and qualities. Tell us a little bit about your own musical background.
Well, I think you're talking about the Kabbalah Music CD, right?
I am talking about the Kabbalah Music CD.
Right. Well, I grew up singing Jewish music in New York. I grew up outside of New York on Long Island. My mother worked in synagogues all over Long Island as a music director and a teacher. And so I grew up with Jewish music. She also had a radio program. She was a radio disc jockey in Long Island, where she had a program of Jewish music. And so she would collect recordings and seek out music from all over the Jewish world, not just the usual stuff that we're accustomed to hearing. So as a kid, I got to hear Yemenite Jewish Passover music. You know, I got to hear really unusual, beautiful music from the Jewish tradition from all over the world. And so my mother passed away when I was 15, and I took over her teaching of Jewish music at a synagogue on Long Island. And that really got me started singing professionally from the time I was 15. And since then, I've been very blessed to make a living sharing music with people around the world. I'm a singer-songwriter. I'm a composer of original music, not just Jewish music, but also, you know, contemporary American folk. But I work in a lot of different genres, a lot of different styles, and I do a lot of research, and I'm just very lucky to be able to spend my life sharing music with people. So that's where it comes from. I was very fortunate to hear it when I was a kid.
You know, it's funny, you do it beautifully. I have to say, I started singing professionally when my dad was a cantor when I was 15, so I feel a certain kinship with that early start. In putting together the Jewish aspect of what you do, are you influenced? Do you try to explore an individual genre, or you just pull together what attracts you at the moment?
My approach to it is to share with the Jewish community, and to not just Jewish audiences, but all audiences, a great diversity of Jewish cultural life. I think people typically have a very sort of narrow view of what Jewish music is, and it's usually what we're raised with. That's the real Jewish music. But what I'm into is really opening out that world into Jewish culture as a global culture. And that's what's fun to me. So I'll find songs from, I do work with the Jewish community in Uganda, for instance. And so I'll sing songs from the Jewish community in Uganda that uses the same Hebrew liturgy, you know, the same words, with the fabulous Ugandan Eastern African music, you know, the same with Morocco or Spain or anywhere else, Iran, Iraq. I never get bored with Jewish music because it's so diverse. So that's really the focus of my work is diversity of Jewish music.
We will hear more from Laura Wetzler and talk more with her when we come back in just a few moments here on Too Jewish.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174.
Now I want to express my thanks. As president of the Cohan Memorial Foundation, I'm glad and grateful that the modest cash awards we started with some 10 years ago have grown into a rather substantial amount with the help of donors like many of you. The Cohan Foundation, named for my grandparents, Rabbi Samuel S. Cohan and A. Irma Cohan of blessed memory, makes these awards for important service to Klal Yisrael, the whole Jewish people. That service can be in one of four areas: unity, education and information, creative arts, or rescue. Our past award winners include some truly amazing people, and we are grateful for the chance to reward them and their fine work. Do you know of someone who could qualify for a Cohan Award in 2015? Or will you consider participating in this work yourself? Please go to our website, www.cohanaward.com, CohanAward.com, where you can find all the information on nominating and on participating in this great work. And we'll be glad to hear from you. Our goal is to help people who work for the whole Jewish people. We welcome David and Pam of Freedom Smoke. Tell us about your product, Freedom Smoke.
Hello, Rabbi Cohan. A pleasure to be here again. Electronic cigarette industry has been around for years. Our product, one of the best things that we've done to improve it, is the base ingredients for our product are brought in from outside of this country. The only place in the world is certified kosher.
Kosher, smokeless, no tobacco, and a variety of health advantages. Do you have a lot of former smokers that have kind of quit because of Freedom Smoke?
Absolutely. We have several people who have written to us as well as told us on a personal basis.
How many flavors are there of what you sell?
Over 700.
And when people walk in the store and they don't know what to do, what do you tell them?
We start them off by finding out what they smoke and how much they smoke. We then set them up with the nicotine level that's appropriate for them, and we find the correct flavor, and that's all that it takes.
How do people find your stores?
They can find us on the internet, of course, freedomsmokeusa.com. We have a toll-free number, 800-705-7013. Word of mouth is really good for our company, bringing people into our stores.
And it's kosher.
That's correct. Yep.
We'll talk next week.
Thank you.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com. That's twojewishradio18@gmail. Or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can stream all past and present shows through the website or download us from there or at the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcasts. You know, during one of my many trips to London, I became friends with a wealthy yet very modest Jewish guy named Hyman Goldfarb. On one visit, Hy told me that because of his generosity and hard work for the many charities he had worked for over the years, the Queen was going to knight him, but he was going to turn it down. "That's a great honor," I said to Hy. "Why would you turn it down?" "Well, because during the ceremony you have to say something in Latin," he said. "I don't know any Latin." "Well, say something in Hebrew," I told him. "The Queen can't know the difference." "That's brilliant," Hy complimented me, "but what should I say?" "Well, remember the question the youngest child asked the father on the first night of Pesach? Could you say that in Hebrew?" "Of course. Manish tanah halayla hazeh." "Thank you. My friend, I shall indeed now become a knight." At the ceremony, Hy waited his turn while a number of other knight honorees went before the Queen. Finally, they called his name. He knelt before Her Majesty. She placed her sword on one of his shoulders and then the other and motioned for Hy to speak. And out came, "Manishtana halayla hazeh." The Queen turned to her husband and said, "Why is this knight different from all other knights?" Sorry about that story. Must be all the matzah going to my brain. And just think, only 6 or 7 days more of matzah to go. So here's a little more Pesach music, one of my favorite takes on just what matzah's like. It's from Eric Schwartz, who calls himself the Smooth E.
I feel like a freak, cause every time I pull out something to eat, for this week, I can't do this, cause I'm Jewish, and I can't eat bread. Yeah, my rabbi said only matzah. Any way you wanna eat it, cold or hot, it's matzah. Fun for your mother, brother, sister, father, matzah. Buy in bulk for a lower cost per box, it's matzah, 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 matzah. Put on your, wait, that's over, so get your over to my pad, it's Passover. I'm the mad flow, a smoothie, and I hope you understand it. If you want the story of Passover, rent the Ten Commandments, starring Charlton Heston. But I got a question about the bread that is unleavened, causing indigestion, called matzah. Eat it for a week, we got stuff. No bread, no pasta. Best believe a Jew is stopped up. Now Moses made the matzah when he was fleeing Egypt. Had no time for bread to rise, he said, "I just leave it. We can eat it like this, feed it to the Hebrews." But little did he know that the weight would end up equal, cause
let my people go.
We hate the anthem, get your damn hands up, maybe it will help you pass some. How could one bread rock is so famous when the taste is the same flavor of the box it came in? Matzah, eat it at once, ain't no second guessing.
Matzah,
leaving crumbs on my lap and chest, and it's called
matzah.
I found the afikomen in my small intestine.
Matzah, 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 matzah.
Now if you never had matzah, maybe you should try it. Be careful, protein junkies, don't mess up your Atkins diet. People laugh when my sandwich cracks, it ain't never quiet. The best place to enjoy matzah is in private. You eating tuna on matzah? No way you're looking cool. It's been 3 days since I dropped the kids off at Hebrew school. I like my matzah sweet with butter and jam on it, but please, out of respect, just don't put ham on it. Don't be scared of the matzah, nothing could be safer. Just think of it as a super-sized communion wafer. We'll trade you the matzah for candy this Easter. Wait, for some reason we can't have corn sweetener either. So go ahead and eat it, whether Jewish or secular. And if you need it, a smoothie will keep you regular. You never heard a Jew like this, I surprise ya. The bread might be flat, but this song is a riser.
Matzah,
when I munch, I love the crunch of
matzah.
I love it a bunch, wash it down with punch.
Matzah,
what's for lunch? I got a hunch, it's
matzah,
matzah, matzah, matzah.
That was Eric Schwartz talking about matzah on Passover, which we are commanded to eat on this festival of unleavened bread. Enjoy it, even if I don't. We welcome our Mivina in Israel, Oshrat Barel, head of the Weintraub Israel Center. Boker Tov, Oshrat, and Chag Sameach.
Boker Tov, Rabbi, Chag Sameach.
Happy Passover. Pesach has many wonderful traditions, matzah not among them. I'm sorry, I don't like matzah, but otherwise a great holiday. And the end of Pesach has a fantastic tradition, the tradition of Mimuna, which is taken from the Jews of Morocco. Tell us about Mimuna a little bit.
I'll tell you about the Mimuna, but I'll give you just one tip how to eat matzah. Just spread some bread, some butter and sugar.
We always did butter and salt. Maybe that was the mistake.
Yes. Try sugar.
Okay.
So the Mimuna, I think we talked about it last year, but let's refresh our memories.
Always.
So gotta there is so many explanation what's the origin of the name Mimuna, if it's from the Rambam, Rabbi Moshe ben Maimon, or it's
Maimonides,
from...
Maimonides, the greatest Jewish Nahon. Teacher and thinker who lived in Morocco for a long
yes.
time.
Yes. And I believe it's the day of his death or birth.
We're not sure.
But this is one of
right.
the...
One tradition, that's right.
And also Mimuna came from the word Mamon, which is fortune. And also there is another explanation that it says on our Torah, Benisan Nigalu, Benisan Atidin Ligael, which is, you will translate it to English, that in Nisan we were out of Egypt, and in Nisan, in the future, the Mashiach will come.
The Messiah will come.
So we are celebrating,
redeem us, right.
we are really...
Many Messianic associations with Passover, but the Mimuna kind of adopted them and mm-hmm. made it a time of great celebration.
Yeah.
So I understand in Morocco, you've told us before how people went from house to house having parties. And since that's a little harder to do in our society, instead we come together for a big party.
Nachon. And this year, like the many years ago, it will be at Temple Emmanuel, Sunday, April 12th, afternoon. And you're all invited to wear costume, to eat Moroccan treats, and to enjoy traditional music. And there is a lot of activities for kids. And we hope to see you.
Chag Sameach. And we say, there's a special phrase, Tirbachu
v'tisadu,
which means may you be blessed and may you be well fed too, satisfied.
Exactly.
Enjoy and celebrate. And a great way to finish, by the way, very important, none of those treats that we have on the Mimuna are kosher l'Pesach. They are not, because by that time Passover is over and we can eat all the bread we want. And I promise there'll be no matzah at the Mimuna.
I can promise.
Thanks very much, Oshrat. Chag Sameach.
Toda, Chag Sameach.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom, and Chag Sameach.
Good morning, Rabbi.
So Passover was a time in Europe that was both very exciting for Jews and also a very nervous time. It came around the time of Easter, of course, and Easter was a time when there were lots of sermons preached that often led to pogroms and other anti-Semitic actions in Christian countries. How did we get there from the early stages where Christianity had defined itself against Judaism as a distinct religion to a really anti-Semitic essence?
Well, the Romans had a lot to do with this. They defined the Jews as treasonous by definition, as bad citizens, and as Christ killers.
In part because they didn't want to be Christ killers themselves.
They couldn't be.
Right.
Once Christianity became their state religion and Jesus became established by the decree of the emperor as God, the Romans could no longer accept responsibility, which... In the first couple of centuries of the Common Era, everybody knew that the Romans were guilty of this. And then, history was rewritten, as it so often is, to suit the purposes of the victors. Anyway, not long after this, not terribly long after Constantine the Great, the Western Roman Empire disappeared. It was battered by barbarians. Rome, and in fact the entire Italian peninsula for a while, were controlled by barbarians. But interestingly, during the course of the next few centuries, the barbarians themselves gradually converted to Christianity.
Probably
the last so-called barbarians to do so were the Vikings. But, by the time of the Crusades, almost all of continental Europe had become Christian. And because at the time there was only one type of Christianity, namely Roman Catholicism, at least in the West, there were no Protestants yet, and part of Catholic doctrine was that the Jews killed Christ. To this was added, and this is what made Easter/Passover such a dangerous time for Jews, to this was added in the Dark Ages, in the early Middle Ages, the blood libel, which basically argued that secret councils of Jews all over Europe would convene in the weeks before Passover and decide which Christian child to kidnap and bleed in order to make matzahs for the Passover Seder. Now, just on the one hand,
horrific.
Right. On the one hand, awkwardly for Christians, everybody knew that the Last Supper was a Passover Seder and that Jesus would not have eaten matzah made with the blood of Christian children. So the argument was that this was a later perversion as a result of the Jews being dispersed throughout Europe, or in fact imposing themselves on the rest of Europe. But anybody with the least knowledge of Judaism knows that if you find a speck of blood in an egg, you have to discard the egg. You can't use it in a cake or bread or an omelet because blood is anathema. We salt and soak our meat in order for it to be kosher.
To get rid of the blood.
Right. So the idea that we would use blood to make matzah, and the fact that, you know, the communal matzah baking ovens were open to the inspection of anyone didn't help because Christians would say, oh, I don't want to watch this abomination. I don't want to watch you use the blood of our children. So they chose not to watch, not to witness the fact that no blood was ever involved in the making of Passover matzah. But this coincidence of two things, Easter being the Feast of Resurrection from the supposedly horrific murder committed by Jews, and the annual murder is supposedly involved in bleeding children in order to make matzah, made this the Passover week a particularly dangerous time for the Jews of medieval Europe.
Awful stuff, but something to be aware of. You know, we saw blood libel statements made in some of the protests against the Gaza war last summer. Stunning. You know, some of these horrible anti-Semitic pieces keep popping back up. Thanks, Tom. We'll talk next week.
I look forward to it.
Happy Passover.
And to you.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear the old Jewish joke of the week.
Is your aging loved one unhappy and having a hard time adjusting to life around them? The TMC Jarrow Psychiatric Center at Handmaker may be able to help. TMC Jarrow Psych specializes in providing short-term inpatient services for older adults experiencing behavioral health issues. Did you know that most people with depression get better when they seek help? With the right treatment, those with anxiety can overcome and learn to cope with their fears, and individuals with dementia can continue leading quality lives. Our team, led by a geriatric psychiatrist, brings expertise from disciplines across a variety of specialties to ensure your loved one receives the right diagnosis and treatment. For more information about our services, please call 324-4600. The TMC Jarrow Psychiatric Center at Handmaker. Call 324-4600. Let's talk about how we can help.
Hi, I'm Ben. Attention Arizona taxpayers, you can help provide a Jewish education to families at no cost to you by redirecting your Arizona state tax dollars to JETCO, the Jewish Education Tax Credit Organization. You can help make Jewish education affordable.
Here's how it works. Arizona lets taxpayers receive a dollar-for-dollar tax credit for payments made to JETCO. This lets JETCO give scholarships to kids who attend private schools like Congregation Anshe Israel's Kindergarten and Tucson Hebrew Academy, serving students from K through 8. Tax credits are different from a tax deduction or donation. When you give to JETCO, you get 100% tax credit. That means your Arizona state income taxes are reduced by the exact amount you've given. Supporters of JETCO can give up to $1,053 for a single filer or $2,106 for a married couple filing jointly and get that whole amount back from state income tax.
Give JETCO a call at 647-8442. That's 647-8442. Or you can go to JETCO.org.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reformed, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week, Jewish humor your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. It was mealtime on an El Al flight. Would you like dinner? The flight attendant asked Moshe. What are my choices? Moshe replied. Yes or no, she said. That was the Old Jewish Joke of the Week, special feature of Two Jewish Just for You. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. This week we read the portion of Shmini, which includes the dramatic incident in which the high priest Aaron's two sons, Kohanim, priests of God serving in the holy tabernacle, offer strange fire and then are immediately consumed by fire themselves. Aaron is distraught, of course. His brother Moses comforts him in God's words, saying, "Bikrovai ekadesh v'alpnei chol ha'am ekaved." By those brought close to me, I am sanctified. Before all the people, I am honored. In other words, those who die before their time as martyrs are made holy to God, and their sacrifice brings honor to the Lord and to the people. This is troubling and confusing. Judaism, from its beginning, rejected the whole concept of human sacrifice. In the story of the Akedat Yitzchak in Genesis, God instructs Abraham to ritually offer up his beloved son Isaac, but then reverses course and demonstrates to him and to all of us that we are never again to sacrifice a human being for religious purposes. And yet, here, those who have just been ordained as priests, leaders of the sacred service that brings us all closer to God, are literally turned into korbanot, burnt offerings in the very place where they lead worship. How do we reconcile this? You know, we rabbis and cantors sometimes joke that this is still the way we treat religious figures in Judaism. First, we raise them up to high office to lead worship, and then we immolate them from bima to ashes in one shining, shimmering, flaming moment. In a larger sense, though, the way in which we engage the idea of sacrificing human lives for a greater good is complex and disturbing. In contemporary society, we often speak of tragic deaths as a kind of human sacrifice. In war, one soldier dies to save others' lives, or to defend a homeland or an ideal. When a child dies, we sometimes say, "She is with God now," or "He is in a better place," or "She was a little too good to live on this earth." When someone dies of an unexpected illness or a violent event, we explain that they have taught us to value every day as sacred. In a way, it's a rationalization for loss. We are trying to explain what is beyond our understanding. But in another sense, this attempt to explain the impossible pain is also a sanctification, a way of finding and preserving holiness and meaning in a world in which things sometimes simply don't make sense. As we seek to do with Yom HaShoah, our Holocaust Remembrance Day coming up soon, and as we can do in our daily lives, we honor the memory of those we love by acting to create holiness, good, and blessing. Sometimes we can then find comfort for our tragic losses. When a young person dies from an illness, we try to mobilize research to find medical cures or preventive measures for that ailment. When senseless tragedy kills innocents, we attempt to change the way our society deals with issues like gun violence or mental illness. When migrants die in the desert, we are moved to attempt to break the terrible cycle. After the loss of his sons, Aaron will go on to serve as the high priest for many years. His work actually brings God's presence into the midst of the people. And in his personal conduct, he becomes an Ohev Shalom, the Rodef Shalom, a lover and pursuer of peace. Loss motivates him to heal others and to seek to make life more holy for everyone in the community. May it be so for us, in our times of distress. May we, too, learn to work to create sanctity and bring healing. For then we will have accomplished what God, through Moses, tells the grief-stricken Aaron, "Bikrovai ekadesh," by those brought close to me I am sanctified. And through our lives and efforts, God will be honored. On the theme of God's presence, here's our guest this morning, Laura Wetzler, singing the classic meditation of Rabbi Levi Yitzchak Berditchev, Adudle, the Song of Eunice, it might be best translated.
V'chol milosheha edu Oy, du, 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 du,
That was Laura Wetzler singing the classic Yiddish song A Dudele. When we return in a moment here on Too Jewish, Laura will tell us not only about her experiences singing in Germany, but also her work with the Abuyudaya Jews in Uganda for Kulanu. Find out how music carries her to so many wonderful Jewish directions when we return in a few moments on Too Jewish.
Hi, Doris. How are you?
Well, Carol, to be honest, now that I'm a little older, I can't get out as much as I'd like. I miss seeing people.
Why don't you come over to my place for lunch on us? The food's delicious. So many choices. And I have a special table with my friends every day. They'd love to have you join us.
Is there much to do there?
There are lots of activities every day. Mondays is Mahjong. Tuesdays, I do yoga. Wednesdays, we go shopping or to the museum or a restaurant. Thursdays, my exercise class. There are book groups, speakers, Shabbos services, concerts, a game room. I'm busier than ever.
Where do you live?
I'm at Handmaker. And the people are great. Please come over for lunch. You'll love it. It's even kosher. Just call me at 322-7035.
Handmaker Jewish Services for the Aging offers the full spectrum of quality senior living and post-hospital rehabilitative care. Call 322-7035. Handmaker for life. 322-7035.
If you like fun and games, you'll love this. And this. And even this. Casino del Sol Resort offers more fun under the sun with the newest slots, the best entertainment, and world-class golf. If you want fun, hit the... at Casino del Sol Resort in Tucson. Take I-10 East to I-19 exit Valencia West or visit CasinoDelSolResort.com.
Well, they're out there having fun in that warm Arizona sun.
Enterprise of the Pasquayaki Tribe.
We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary from our guest, Rabbi Batsheva Appel.
In Jerusalem, former Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert was found guilty of accepting cash-filled envelopes from a U.S. Jewish businessman and using it for personal gain. A three-judge panel of the Jerusalem District Court announced the verdict Monday in the retrial of the so-called Talansky affair. The court found Olmert guilty on charges of fraud under aggravating circumstances and breach of trust. Israel's Supreme Court ordered the new trial last month to allow the introduction of new testimony from Olmert's former assistant, Shula Zakin. The material included recordings of incriminating conversations between Olmert and Zakin, who provided the information last spring as part of a plea bargain. The recordings showed that Olmert used the money from the businessman, Morris Talansky, for personal and not political use. A lawyer for Olmert said the former prime minister will appeal the decision to the Supreme Court. The Dutch royal family contacted the heirs of a Nazi-looted painting's owners as a step toward restitution. Queen Juliana had purchased the painting from a Dutch art dealer in 1960, according to the independent research commissioned by the palace in 2012, the news agency AFP reported. It was not known at the time that the painting by the Dutch master Vanderhagen, had been stolen from its original Dutch Jewish owners in 1942 during the Nazi occupation of the Netherlands. The investigation found that another painting in the royal collection, whose provenance was in question, was not stolen. Sigma Alpha Mu, the historically Jewish fraternity known as SAMI, is shutting down its University of Michigan chapter in the aftermath of an incident that resulted in criminal charges against its president. The incident in question at Treetops Resort left 45 hotel rooms trashed and $430,000 worth of damage and legal fees, according to CBS Detroit. Sigma Alpha Mu's International Board voted last week to shut down the chapter, and the University of Michigan called the students' behavior reprehensible. This is Rabbi Batsheva Appel, and that was the two Jewish news of Jews around the world.
We welcome back to Two Jewish Our Guest this morning. Laura Wetzler is an ASCAP award-winning singer-songwriter. She tours something like 150 concerts and lectures every year, sings not only contemporary folk American music, but a wide and rich variety of Jewish music, from Yiddish to Ladino to African, all of the various cultures and musical styles and forms of Jewish music. A remarkable story about your grandfather. Tell us a little bit about that story.
Well, like I had always heard in my family, my father was a Holocaust survivor from Germany, and I had heard that his grandfather was a cantor, but I didn't really know anything about him particularly except his name. So, like everybody else, I'm on the internet, and I just decided I'm become interested in Jewish genealogy. And so I typed in Moses Wetzler, and up comes this whole bunch of stuff from a website called Alemannia Judaica, which is a website devoted to the Jewish communities of southern Germany, the historical Jewish communities of southern Germany for the past, 200 years, and actually longer than that, obviously. The website itself is run by people who are interested in the Jewish history of Germany and have done research in each little town. So I knew that my great-grandfather worked for 38 years in a town called Pronach, which is in southern Germany. The east of Frankfurt. And there were these three articles, and they were in from German Jewish newspapers from the 19th century. And I put them into Google Translate, and up comes these three articles about Moses Wetzler. First, they're advertising for the gig, for the job of cantor, and he ends up, it turns out he was a cantor, a shochet, a moyel, a teacher. He sold insurance. He had 12 children.
So he had to do a lot of things to support everybody.
He had to do all that stuff.
We call it a kolbo. He was everything.
That's right. Right. So this is actually my great-grandfather. Okay. So he was born in 1848. Okay. And there are these three articles about him in Kronach when he first got there. The middle article was his 25th jubilee of having been there was no rabbi in the town.
Right.
So he, which was rather common in the southern little towns, where the cantor would play all of those roles and under the direction of a district rabbi. And so there was an article about his 25th jubilee. And then finally, there was an article that was his obituary. And I was completely blown away. And at the bottom of this page of the, the history of the Jews of Kronach, including what they went through during the Nazi era and the Holocaust. And at the bottom is a picture of the synagogue that he davened in. And it had been desecrated during the war most of the synagogues were destroyed in Germany during the war, or at least desecrated. It had been desecrated during the war, and it had been, for the past 70 years, used as
a garage or a warehouse.
Or a garage or something, yeah. And when they were going to destroy the building because it was, you know, it was old, one of the young Germans in the community said, no, you can't do this. We can't pretend that there was not a Jewish community in this town, and we have to save this building. So this group, this Action Circle Kronach of German citizens, they got together and raised $250,000 to restore this little jewel. It's like a beautiful little stone chapel. It was built in 1883, and Moses and his wife and his family were there until 1921, I think. And they had restored the synagogue, and there's a picture of it. And I'm totally blown away. So I write an email to the head of the Action Circle thanking them for the work they had done, because this was privately raised funds. This was not the German government, or these people had really put their heart and soul into creating this memorial. I wrote a little email just saying who I was, that I was the great-granddaughter of Moses, and I'm thanking them for restoring, saving the memory at least. And they, when they heard that I was a musician and a professional musician, they invited me to come and do a concert there. So it was the year before last, they invited me to come and sing in the synagogue and do a concert of Jewish music in the synagogue where my great-grandfather had davened for 38 years.
Incredible.
So that's the story.
Must have been an amazing experience.
It was extraordinary. It's a beautiful little shul, first of all. It's very small and with tremendous dignity. I'm really fascinated by Jewish history, and so I do a lot of studying. Really, the music is a way of bringing people into Jewish history in an accessible way, you know. So I did this concert of Jewish music in this beautiful little shul, and it was really, really quite extraordinary. And then they invited me back. I was there this past June, and on that trip I also sang in the synagogue where my father grew up in Frankfurt, which is the West End Synagogue, which is in the big city of Frankfurt, which is a very different experience. It was really a totally, the internet is such an amazing thing of what you can, how you can do research and dig into your roots, you know. So
what up?
Yeah, and since then we've been doing a lot of research and gathering photographs, and have a quite warm relationship with the city of Kronach, of coming back and doing concerts and that sort of thing.
I want to talk about another part of your work. You've spent a good deal of time in Uganda with the Abu Yudaya. Tell me how that started and what that experience is like for you.
Well, for the past 12 years, I've volunteered as the Kulanu, KULANU, Kulanu.org coordinator for Uganda. Kulanu is an organization of volunteers, and we work with Jewish communities around the world who are underserved on the scene, people are coming back to Judaism. It was 1995, I was listening to NPR, and I hear this report about Kulanu, this organization, going to visit a black Jewish community in Uganda. And I hear a little girl singing, Shema Yisrael Adonai Echad, Shema Yehudi. And I'm thinking, wow, that's really cool. What is that, you know? There is Hebrew lyrics and this wonderful African melody. And the whole report had lots of music in it. And the story of the community is that in 1919, some Christian missionaries went to Uganda and tried to convert the people there to Christianity. And this particular group of folks in eastern Uganda, the head of the community, Sine Kokungulu, said, you know, we really like this book you've brought us, which was, you know, the Christian Bible, but we only like the stories in the first half. They preferred the stories from the Old Testament, and they identified with the stories in the so-called Old Testament in the Torah. And when you listen to the parasha, when you listen to the Torah in Uganda, in Shabbat services, up on Nabagoya Hill there, it all makes such perfect sense that you're hearing these tribal stories in a tribal culture, you know. The Abu Yudaya had been living as Jewish people as they could from the Torah, since 1919 under the radar. They lived through Idi Amin. They lived through all kinds of terrible vicissitudes as this minority. During Idi Amin, they prayed Shabbat in caves. They were persecuted. It was just incredible story about them holding on to this Jewish identity from the Torah for all those years. And so I had heard about them on this NPR report that this organization, Kulanu, was going to visit them. And so I had listened to the music and had begun telling their story in my concerts and singing some of their songs. And when I went to record their version of Lachadadi, which of course is our song that is sung in every Jewish community around the world. It's from the 16th century Shlomo Alkadeh's poem. I was singing their version of it. I called up Kulanu and asked, so where do I send a royalty check? you can't just sing people's songs. You know, you have to pay for it. So right. I didn't know where to send a check in Uganda.
Spoken like a true ASCAP member.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we've got some ethics here.
Yes, absolutely.
I called Kulanu, and the head of Kulanu said, well, the composers of that song are in New York, and they would love to meet you, and they would love to come in the studio and you know, sing it with you. And so that's how I met the head of the community, you know, of the LDUDI in New York. We sang together, and then they invited me to come to Uganda. And so in 2002, I went with Kulanu to visit. And I was so, I was really appalled at the poverty, the level of poverty that they were living in, and very upset. And so I got, although I'd never done any development work before, I was encouraged by Kulanu to get involved. And I read this book called Despite Good Intentions. It's a really, really great book about all the failures of the development industry. It was written by Tom Dictorow, who had been in the development industry for like 20 years, and just millions of dollars completely. It was all about the failures. It wasn't about the successes. It was about the failures.
Great.
$20 million spent on X, Y, and Z, where they didn't train the folks, they didn't speak to the folks, they didn't have any respect for the folks they were trying to help. And so I read this book and I said, you know what? Even if I screw up, I'll screw up on a very small scale. Because I'm a musician, I don't have any background in this. But for the past 12 years, I've worked with the community on over 25 different projects. We have Kulanu helped support a primary school and a high school. I helped them start a coffee importing project, a tourism project, some loan, microloan or microfinance. We worked on many, many different projects together, and it's been probably the most, you know, exciting journey of my life to spend the last 12 years working together with this community to try and fight the poverty that they've been living in over there through education, largely. What they really asked for was education, was help with education, right, and prayer books. You know, so
so that we could do.
So yeah.
I want to thank Laura Wessler for a great visit here on Too Jewish. If you want to find out more about her work and her music, it's Laura Wessler, WETZLER.com. Thank you so much, Laura.
My pleasure, Rabbi. Thanks so much.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest, get a final musical playout.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reformed, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday at 9. Our guest will be Nigel Savage, the director of Chazon, the Jewish Food Sustainability Organization, discussing the Shemitah year, this sabbatical year. Our playout this morning comes from our guest, Laura Wessler, singing the Sephardic song Bar Yochai about the mystical author of the Zohar. My friends, have a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
Bar Yochai, Nimshach Tashrei.
Shemecha, Shem Sasonecha, Verecha, Bar Yochai, Nimshakta Shrecha, Shem Sasonecha, Verecha. Mishakodesh, Nim Shata, Mimi Data Kodesh, Tasata Tzitz, Nezer Hakodesh, Chavush Al Roshka,